Blog Talk Radio.
This is a program for all America.
Hey, welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkley Show. We meet together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. Did you have a good weekend? I hope so. We'll talk about how, we talked about clutter and creativity on Friday. I was going through things for the big giveaway bags, and I sorted through my book collection, and boy, did I find a few treasures and a few things that I had no business hanging on to. We'll talk about that. Also, my first disappointment in the fall movie season. Did you watch Breaking Bad last night? I'm not really into that show, but I have my spies out. Some mixed reviews. We'll talk about that. Also, we're about to shut down September, and maybe the government with it. We'll find out. I'll tell you, interestingly enough, what will be affected and what won't be affected. And, of course, some creative nudges for the Inspiration to Action Challenge all ahead. If you want in and you're listening live on Monday, give us a call, 347-857-4505. Also, you can tweet us live, Aurora, back at the Twitter feed. She did a great job on Friday. Tweet us at AB Writes. First, though, it's Monday, and if you can do it, I can't always swing it, but if I can, I love to introduce you to some great new under-the-radar artists, and this young woman will not be under the radar long. Caroline Rose is a very talented independent singer-songwriter who has got a very distinct sound, but when you listen, you'll hear hints of people like Ricky Lee Jones, John Hyatt, the Indigo Girls even. Just a really fabulous singer-songwriter. She's going to talk about her journey and her inspirations and influences. But first, though, I'd like you to listen to one of her songs. This one is called This Is What Livin' Feels Like. It's Caroline Rose opening up the Monday edition of the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
On a stolen nip, stacked up on Mohawk cigarettes. I know someone needs a fix. Parties in New York City, the rest of dollar piece. Pay my way on the Nancy's face in New Orleans. I'm getting any younger. Oh, I'm passing alone. The best night, the prettiest sight. In my rear view, the backless, heavy sky. I know, baby. Cars on Houston, think about past this town. Johnny's got a slip with my name on it in Austin, where everybody's hip. Honey, I guess so. I'm out. I want the cowboy to lead me in some honky tonk dive, a juke joint jive like Homer. Cornhusky, red, my baby. Two left turns off Highway 61. I'm keeping this road hot until she drops back top in the back. My finest bottom of the sky. Drop down in the valley. Feeling alright on the stereo. Feeling like I could dance all night, baby. It's fun living, feels like.
Piece of the pie. If I'm going out, then I'm going out of style.
indeed, this is what living feels like. Now we'll get to moving on a Monday. It's Caroline Rose on the Amy Beth Arkoui Show, and we're delighted to welcome Caroline to the show live with us. Caroline, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, indeed. You've got a great sound. You've been traveling around the country for a while. You're still a very young woman. People listen to that song, they hear so much life in it, in your voice. Talk to me a little bit about your roots and your inspirations. Where does this sound come from?
I'm not really sure how to describe that, because this is just one type of music that I play, and this is, this is my first record, so it's very much deeply rooted in a lot of Southern rock. Most of my family's from the South. I grew up in the North, but I think it's pretty much a mix between, some Appalachian folk music mixed with, some honky-tonk from the Southern rock, and, it's sort of a blend of a lot of things.
Yes, sort of like what came to you up.
What's that?
Yeah. No, I was going to say, you sort of got all this stuff by osmosis, all this influences, and you created your own sound.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope so. we'll find out. Yeah. I mean, I think, every artist is kind of constantly trying to find their true sound, and who knows if, anyone ever does find a true sound that's truly original, but I think I'm working towards it and getting closer with each thing that I write, and hopefully the next record is a little bit more in a bit of a new direction, and I kind of continue to find that, continue to explore, I guess.
Yeah, and evolve and explore as you go, and you've traveled around the country, you're touring with this record, and how do you find, where do you get your inspiration from to write the songs? Because you have so many on this album, America Religious, a really deep collection of songs. Do you find inspiration through other artists? Do you find inspiration in your daily life, people you encounter? Where does it come from? Or can you, maybe you don't know.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a blend of all those things. I don't think anybody has like one formula that they use, or maybe they do, I don't know, but I don't really have any formula, and they kind of just happen, and I live my life and do what I want to, and then they sort of just fall into place. There's definitely no formula. It just sort of happens. I mean, I've heard Dylan describe it as sort of a magical moment where it'll just pop into his head, and then he writes it down, and then that's the song, and that's how it lives. And I like that way of thinking about it, because, as soon as you have an idea, the first thing I want to do is get it down as soon as possible, because that's as close to your original idea as you can get.
You don't want to wait.
Recording, you want to record as fast as you can, at least in my opinion, to get as true to the essence of the song as you can.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right. A lot of times people think about ideas in all kinds of writing, whether it's music or fiction or anything else, and you have the idea and you think it's going to stay with you, and a lot of times it won't. So if you can get to that computer or pad or whatever your source is, that your conduit, get it down as soon as you can. I agree with that. Who are some of you mentioned Dylan. Who are some of your musical influences?
I don't know. I mean, everybody loves Bob Dylan. Everyone does.
Yeah. They actually have a campaign now to try to get him the Nobel Prize. Have you heard about that?
Oh, really?
That's fine. Yeah.
I hope he turns it down. I hope he turns it down. But he probably won't.
He's not as radical as he used to be, but you never know. Yeah.
I don't know. In a lot of ways, I idolize Dylan the way that he sort of idolized Woody Guthrie. My influences kind of range from a crazy amount of people. Sometimes it's not even musicians. I'll kind of try and embody, a person from a book into a song, or, somebody from the movies. Jesse James. I really love Jesse James. And sometimes I'll play that. John Lee Hooker has a version of On Bad Like Jesse James. He might have written it, actually. That's the only version I've actually heard, so it might be his. But Sometimes I'll listen to that on repeat and just kind of get into the zone of that's the person that I want to embody. Like I want to put myself in that skin. And that seems to work pretty well. And you know, on this record, and you'll hear it on the next record, and I mean, hopefully on every record after this. You know, a lot of the songs don't really come from my perspective. A lot of them I'm sort of just both imagining and using things that I've experienced and people that I've met as sort of an amalgamation to create this persona. So, you know, you can hear that on basically almost all the songs, except for maybe, you know, there might be one or two that are actually from my perspective, but I'll never tell you that.
Right.
I'll never tell anyone that.
Oh, don't. That's good. Keep the mystery going. But it's interesting because it's like a storyteller. You know, you don't have to be. A lot of, you know, singer-songwriters are just confessional and it is about their life. Other people, like you, seem to be coming from the tradition of really telling stories and embodying whatever characters or people that you come across, whether it's true or completely fictional. It doesn't have to be true. We always think of songwriting kind of as this confessional art because since from the 70s on up, it's sort of been this sort of confessional art form, but it doesn't need to be. Well, I mean, why can't it be like short story writing, or why can't it be, I mean, people like, you know, certainly Dylan and Harry Chapin, those kind of people always, you know, had story songs. So what's wrong with that? Actually, I love that because I'm a fiction writer and I love stories. So.
You know, and there are a lot of contemporary artists right now. Kendrick Lamar is like one of my favorite storytellers, and a lot of the young rappers today are really the best writers, in my opinion. I mean, some of the stuff that Kendrick Lamar is putting out is it's legendary in the making, and from a storytelling point of view. It's very original, so I'm kind of getting influences from all different types of music, and books, and yeah, I'm right now I'm in the middle of some Chekhov short stories, and you know, who he was in real life is very different from the way that he wrote stories. They're very cynical and kind of matter of fact, but in his daily life he was actually a huge optimist, and the stories are very tongue in cheek. So, I kind of like that. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people don't really look too much in depth into the lyrics anymore. I mean, I'm sure there are a ton of people who do, but it just seems like the norm right now is kind of, you know, and that's why people who are writing songs of substance or trying to pursue the artistic quality of music, it's always going to be a bit indie. It's always going to be against the mainstream. And then you have people who kind of break through that and then start something, you know, sort of a new movement. And that happens, it seems, every generation has, a handful of leaders who kind of do that, which is inspiring.
You want to be one of those leaders, it sounds like.
Oh no, I really don't care. I just want to make music. I just want to make music and make good music and satisfy this kind of, you know, I've got this whole untapped amount of energy in me right now, creative energy, and it started out as just kind of a necessity to be able to be a sane person and a happy person, and kind of express all these feelings that I had that I didn't know. You know, I've always been kind of a loner, and I don't really like talking to people to kind of express the things that I'm feeling. So I always wrote them down, and as soon as I found music, it became this thing that I needed. And now that it's sort of becoming a career, which is nice, it looks like I'm going to have a career, it kind of, I don't know, things start to change a little bit.
In terms of what, the way you look at your perspective to what you're writing or how you're writing?
Well, I guess because, when it's a necessity, you're only writing the things that you absolutely need to write. You know, and that's why a lot of artists, at least a lot of the artists that I respect and really appreciate, and relate to are the ones that write, you know, really angsty songs or sad songs or songs about desire. And I think some of the best songs are about those things that you absolutely need to get out. They need to, you need to be able to express them in some way because there's, it's bottled up inside of you. And then when it becomes a career, you know, you have more at your fingertips. You have recording studios and you have, you know, the more the downside of things is, you know, you, if you're signed with a record label, you have contracts to fulfill, so you have to put out records, and you just have more output. So you have, you still have those songs that you need to write, that need to get out, but you also have songs that you just want to write, or that you want to kind of explore something, so you just go for it. I mean, I don't think Joni Mitchell needed to do that Mingus stuff. Like, I don't think that it was something that she absolutely needed to do, but it's interesting, you know, and I think people who appreciate Joni Mitchell or people like Joni Mitchell is when they do things like that, that might be completely different from what their original recordings were, but
well, of course,
that's how you grow. That's how you
expand. Didn't want her to write that, actually, you know, the whole story,
okay.
The backstory of that. Well, I would say her record company or those people didn't really want her to do the Mingus stuff because they knew it wasn't going to be as commercially successful and viable. But she wanted to do it because she wanted to do it because it's Charles Mingus more than for herself. I think you're right about that. So, yeah, sometimes collaborations come up that people want to be involved in. Talk about the juggling act because, you know, you talk about you're writing songs and then you're recording songs and then you're touring. So there's a big juggling act for you as an artist to are you very disciplined in terms of when you write or, as you said earlier, you just like to wait till the idea comes to you and then get it down as quickly as possible? And how does that interfere with the recording schedule and then your touring schedule? Because I know you do a lot of shows and you tour a lot, and that has to take a bite out of the actual, well, maybe not the writing process. Maybe you write while you're on tour. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I guess everybody's got a different method. I don't really have a method. There's no formula at all. Like, I'm not kidding when I say that. But we actually, you know, it kind of goes in cycles for me. I guess my personality is a bit complex because things like weather changing, it really affects me, like, heavily. So, I mean, that's probably a reason why I like to travel pretty much constantly. And I don't have an apartment, and I don't have a home base, really, which I like. And it kind of continues, the more I meet people and the more I go out there and do things, the more I have a desire to write and have things to write about. So, you know, when we're on the road, it's a bit different because you don't have that freedom of being able to do whatever you want. You have obligations to fulfill. You have to be at a place in a city at a certain time and then play a show. But luckily, touring only lasts so long. You know, the first run that we did was about 6 weeks, which was really long, at least in my mind, that was really long. And then we did another run that was a bit shorter than that. And now we've got some scattered dates. But I have quite a bit of time to just kind of do whatever suits me. And, you know, I'm actually the reason why on my end the phone's a bit scratchy because I'm pretty much in the middle of nowhere. I'm working on at a cider distillery for the fall, and then we're going back in the studio, making another record, and I've already had the songs done for a long time, so, and the arrangements, and so I'm doing the demos right now. And and then after that, I'm probably going to go just go down south where it's warm, and then we go back out again in January. So it's things like that. You kind of find time. I don't ever have a time where I sit down and force myself to write something because it never works, and I always end up hating whatever it is because it feels forced and it sounds forced. And but I do find that when I wake up really early in the morning, my head is always full of thoughts. And sometimes that happens, like, in the middle of the night. I'll wake up, and then I can't turn my brain off, and then I have just all these thoughts, and then I can't sleep, and so I'll write them down. Yeah. And so there's no real process to it, but the songs keep coming. I mean, I don't force them to come, but they, as long as I'm living and thinking and experiencing things, I think they'll always be there. And I'm not satisfied with life at all. I think I'm very happy with all the things that I've done, and you know, like my family likes to say that I've lived 9 lives already for a 23-year-old. I mean, I've done some pretty amazing things, and I'm really proud of that. But as far as life is concerned, I think I see this whole heaping plate of things to be done and things to write about, and it's just a constant flow of energy all the time. And I think as soon as I stop thinking that way, I think what's going to happen as soon as I'm really happy with life, where I'm in a place where I'm content with everything that's going on, and I've got my work, and I've you know, maybe have like a little house and a family, then as soon as I'm happy, then maybe I won't need songs anymore. When that time comes, I'll probably stop writing, because I won't. Mm-hmm. The world won't need any more of my songs. Not that I need any of my songs now, but there won't be any.
No.
Writing. You know.
They need them. That's the paradox, the artistic paradox. Yeah, you know, you're not content, so that you write, and then once you are content, you'll see. There's always something to be malcontent about, though, even when you're happy, because the world is out there, and especially the kind of writer that you are, the kind of artist that you are, where you embrace other people and other stories. So you might not write from your own angst, your own issues, but you might write from other people's. But I think
I remember Bruce Springsteen said that once. It was that, I can't remember the name of the record, but it was like, you know, when he got married and he bought a house, and he got married to his guitar player or bass player or something. And then he made that next record when he was, you know, he was pretty happy, and everyone hated it. he was like, you can't write records when you're happy.
But he came back and did a lot of other things. You know, he did the whole Pete Seeger cycle and all of those things.
Yeah,
but,
I love.
I mean, you talk about Yeah, me too. You talk about longevity in a career. I mean, there's somebody who really has withstood the test of time. And wow, 60 something still looks fabulous. Great shape. Great voice.
I know. He's such a dreamboat. Yeah, I think he's going to be a dreamboat like until he's like 90, and people will still be swooning over Bruce.
Yeah. Exactly. He really hasn't, you know, his artistic, a lot of people lose something, maybe because they don't have that hunger as much, or maybe they are too happy, but he just seems to have it because he's so into the world, and he's so active in terms of social issues and that kind of thing, that it keeps fueling it as well, I think. So I think you're going to do that, and I really think people are going to hear from you for a very long time. I really do, because you have a great sound, and you have a very interesting perspective and sensibility. What about the music business now, because it's always been hard, of course, but it's become more complicated now. It's easier in some ways to get your work out there, but it seems to be harder for people to make a living at it. What has your experience been?
I basically, you know, right now it's still pretty early for me, and I've already. It's just a little bit tricky because I'm pretty green when it comes to the business side of everything, and I hate it. So, you know, my manager and I. You know, now we just got signed to a booking agent, a really great booking agency that has been helping out hugely.
Great, congratulations!
But for the most part, the team is really small, and you know we've already started getting a bunch of offers to kind of expand. But I haven't been totally satisfied with any of the deals yet, so we're still kind of trying to find that golden deal. Because it's a bit scary because once you sign on the dotted line, you can't really go back. So there's a huge amount of pressure to make the right decision. And there are a lot of I only want to make, you know, even if you make a mistake once, sometimes it could be a really detrimental mistake. So when it comes to the music industry, I mean, I hate it. I hate the business part of it. I think every artist kind of just has their woes about having to deal with all that BS. Can I curse on this? Is that... I can't curse,
yeah,
right?
You can. You can. Okay. That's okay.
All right. So I have a pretty foul mouth. I've been trying to tone it down, so... I've been doing okay.
You've been doing great. No, you're doing great. But yeah, I think it's always been tricky. I mean, way back when, you know, you always had those scandals of people that would get, you know, screwed out of the royalties and people suing people like Phil Spector and all that kind of stuff. But it just seems to be, you know, with all the digital age and people being able to essentially download music sometimes for no money and that kind of thing, there's all that extra stuff added to it, along with the pressures that the record company deal can make. But you're wise for someone who doesn't like the business or doesn't think you know enough about it to be careful and be, you know, scrutinize the deals that come forward, because you want to make the right decisions. I totally get that, and I think you're going to get some great opportunities with this great music, and of course you're building a fan base.
Curse, I think,
What the access that you have to the.
Well, yeah. The whole, I mean, the digital age has changed everything. So even, I think a lot of people, even within the industry, are still trying to figure out what the next step is going to be. Because right now, you know, I've my whole life I've been anxious about time, about, you know, from the time I was a little kid up until now, you know, I worry about running out of creative juice and running out of my youth, really. Because it's going to come a point when I'm going to get tired of, you know, living out of my car and traveling all over the place. And, But, you know, the music industry is interesting because artists have more control than they've ever had, ever. But that also means that it's way harder to get a career going, to make money doing it. Because, you know, okay, so we're talking about Dylan and Joni Mitchell, the early, you know, the great songwriters of the 60s and 70s. They all had major record labels backing them, which means that, you know, they have things like distribution, press, marketing, all this stuff is all backed by the same set of really deep pockets and connections, and everybody knows each other. And now it's much harder to get a record label on board, even if they're independent, because there's no money. So you know, they want to know that you can sell out shows and be able. So, you know, record labels now have a much more invested role in the money that you're making. So, say you're a musician that also has an acting career on the side. You know, if you're signed with a major record label, a lot of them are gonna use whatever you are producing. So if you have that great acting career, you know, they might even take a percentage of what you're making from like a commercial. Or so it's much more complicated. So
the onus is very much on the artist, of course, to promote yourself and get yourself.
And you know, that's why I think it takes bands like the Black Keys or. I mean, fill in the blank, it takes a lot longer for them to really break and have the type of lucrative career that, you know, artists in their early 20s would have, you know, even 15 years ago.
On the other side of it, the good side, as you said before, with the access, you could put a video up on YouTube, say, and somebody could sign you, like I think Alabama Shakes, somebody saw them and they offered them part of a tour deal or something, you know, just by one song. So on that side, you do have that possibility of getting like an instant, you know, exposure.
That's definitely true. The internet is an incredibly powerful thing that there's a whole slew of ways that I guess people get noticed now or try and get their name out there. But I think it always comes back to how much effort you're putting in. You know, you could put a video up on YouTube, but unless you're like kind of putting it out there and promoting it and trying to get those initial group of people to start seeing it and spreading it, you know, the more work you put in, I think in a lot of cases, if you have the talent and if you have the right timing, you'll find more success. So.
Yeah, well, that's always that tricky cocktail of, you know, talent, timing, perseverance, all of that. Sounds like you have that. We'll get the luck part kicking for you. You definitely have the talent. Sounds like you have the perseverance, that's for sure.
Yeah, thank you.
And the interest to travel around, and you have a great sound. I'm wishing you the best. We have another song to hear. This is the title song, America Religious, from this phenomenal album. Now, if people want to get more information about you, the best way to do it is to go to your website. Is that CarolineRoseMusic.com?
Yeah, CarolineRoseMusic.com. And if you join the Facebook page, I post on that a lot because it's a good way to keep in touch with fans and stuff. So, and that's just Facebook.com/CarolineRoseMusic.
Right. Yeah, just put in Caroline Rose Music and on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I think you're on Twitter, although I don't think you're that active on Twitter, but I did check you out on Twitter. But you're around.
Yeah, no, I can't stand Twitter.
well, social media, I mean, there's so many
to keep up with.
Yeah. There's so many, exactly, there's so many of these social media sites, so it's like they should have one, I always say that, we need one consolidated site, you know. But people will find you, and what's, so now are you're on a hiatus now from touring, when do you hit the road again, did you say?
Oh, we've got some scatter dates throughout the winter, but this coming weekend we'll be in Boston. We're playing a show with our good friends in this band called the Ballroom Thieves, and then we'll be in Burlington, Vermont, November 22nd at Signal Kitchen, and
right.
Yeah, and then we've got
and all those
some,
dates are listed on your website, right?
Yeah, some of them, some of the later ones aren't totally confirmed yet. So, but if you keep posted on the website, then and I'll put all that stuff will be up pretty soon.
Okay, great. Yep. Do you want to give us a little insight into the song "America Religious"? A little background for it?
Oh, sure. It's a from the perspective of I think I was reading it. A lot of poetry at the time. There's definitely a lot of Rambo influences in there, but it's from the perspective of somebody who's kind of wandering around, pretty disillusioned with life. This one's one of the more autobiographical songs, I guess. Mm-hmm.
You let the cat out of the bag. Right?
Yeah. Well. I mean, it's pretty obvious that this one in particular. At least it's anybody who knows me. It's pretty obvious,
yeah.
But what's that?
No, I was gonna say it's a great song. It's a great album, and I recommend people give a listen and support you. I think we're gonna hear a lot more from you. You know, keep up the good work.
Well,
and
hopefully, we'll see.
We'll see. Absolutely. Thanks for joining us, Caroline Rose. Check her out at CarolineRoseMusic.com. You're very welcome. Wish you the best of luck. I hope you come back and see us again before you become too famous to forget us. Here's America Religious. Give a listen. Thanks so much.
best by agribusiness. Is this what you'd always dreamed it'd be? Yeah, well, the two spots, dream spots, scattered at the table as we plunged in ankle deep, oh, in table conversation. Meanwhile, out in the distance, in the mist there rang a scream as we all dropped our heads, we sheared our eyes. Oh, thank you for the speech. I think I'd like to take this time to toast myself to the wine. Keep your two cents and your change, honey, around here we work for our pay. It's good I've got two legs to stand on. I drink myself blind, uncurtailed by moderation. Stand on me, but stand on you. For loose disillusion than you.
Show and the title track from the album America Religious. Find out more about this talented artist at carolinerosemusic.com. Hey, the number in motion, 347-857-4505. Hit me up at the Twitter feed, Aurora waiting for you at AB Writes. And we'll talk government shutdown, creative inspiration, and a pair of reality stars that might be playing with fire. All that coming up on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Stick around.
Every day I wake up, pour myself a cup of that rich Folgers aroma. The best part of waking up is the doo-wop, doo-wop, did all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop, diddy.
Now, we Republicans blame the Democrats in Congress for this whole sequestration mess.
Well, as you recall, thanks to us Democrats, the fiscal cliff was narrowly avoided in January.
Now, hold on. You can't take all the credit for that. We Republicans had a lot to do with that, too.
Well, President Obama wanted $1.6 billion a year in increased tax revenue.
Mm-hmm. And Speaker Boehner offered $800 million.
And we compromised on $620 million.
And then did we cut anything at all?
Absolutely. We agreed to reduce spending by $1.5 billion a year.
Great. And how much do we currently spend?
About $10 billion a day.
Okay. So now, what percentage of a cut is that?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm terrible at math. Well, thank goodness the voters are, too.
Boy, no kidding. That's a good reason to keep cutting that education budget. Man, I would never get so many votes if my constituents were better educated.
Me neither. Now, do you think they realize that we actually took that deficit problem, placed it on the ground, and gave it a good kick
down the road again? Kick that can right down the road again. Pleasing no one but contributors and friends.
If cans are kicked, it should be both our ends.
same old road again. We look like a flattened toad again. Cutting is so very hard, so we just spend.
And our grandkids can pay it in the end.
Is it blown again? Is there still some time for leadership worth showing? Well, that all depends. I get the sense we're driving as we're going, like Lindsay Lohan. It's fourth down and ten.
Is it late? Can we just vote again?
It's 2 p.m. on Thursday. Our work week must end, because Congress can't wait to get on the road again. Yeah, we can't wait to get on the road again.
Indeed, the Capitol Steps and their interesting take on what's happening in Congress, or not, as the case may be. Welcome back. It's the Andy Zarkowitz Show, 347-857-4505. At the Twitter feed at AB Writes, I have a couple of tweets already, right? We got somebody, Lenny1, says, hey, great interview, Caroline Rose. Like that music. Indeed, check it out, carolinerosemusic.com. And Pearlie says, I'm sick to death with the Congress. They're doing nothing on both sides, a pox on both their houses. That's what a lot of people have to say about what's going on with the government shutdown, which may happen by midnight tonight. There may be some last-minute salvation, we'll see. But if the government shuts down, what will be affected? Now, it's interesting. Congressional paychecks, not so much. They're going to still go through. Social Security checks will still go through. The mail still goes through. But for some reason, the military pay, these people who are essential, who are putting their butts on the line for us, they're going to get IOUs. They'll get paid eventually. But they need their money. They need their paychecks. That's going to be on hold. Passport applications on hold. Student loan processing on hold. National parks and monuments are closed. Places like the Statue of Liberty, the National Zoo, the Presidential Libraries, all of that stuff shut down. And with it, all the tourism and businesses that are affected. So it's really crazy. But why are the Congress still getting their money? I guess they come from a different fund. I think there are a couple of congressmen, to be fair, when asked about this last week, said, yes, we think they should also not get paid. During the sequestration, which is still going on, they did, in fact, decline a pay raise. Very big of them, I might say, really. But you know what won't be affected? The thing that Ted Cruz and company wants to shut down, Obamacare, so-called. The Affordable Health Care Act goes into effect tomorrow, and it's going to happen whatever happens with this shutdown. So to me, that's irony at its worst, if you know what I mean. It just doesn't make sense to me. What about you? 347-857-4505 is the number that gets you into the convo, as they say. And lots to talk about. I know a lot of people watched Breaking Bad, the finale last night. I heard it was more satisfying for those people who were fans. And, you know, full disclosure, the last time I watched Breaking Bad, I think, was the first season. It just wasn't my kind of show. But it is critically acclaimed. Lots of people love it. The way that I love Mad Men, say, or The Sopranos. But apparently, I don't want to give it away in case you haven't seen it yet. No spoilers here. I did read a little bit about it. A couple of friends clued me in into what happened. And they do say it's more satisfying as a finale than, say, Lost or The Sopranos, which kind of left people scratching their heads. So take that for what it's worth, and let me know if you've seen it, what your take is it on it, because it's not my show. I did watch last night the new ABC drama Betrayal, which comes on after Revenge. It has some intrigue, some possibilities. We'll see how it all plays out. The Blacklist, which I watched last Monday, a little underwhelmed, although the coming attractions make it look ever more intriguing. It's a story about this guy who's a criminal who comes back, says he'll unveil other criminals for the FBI, but he has to work with this one FBI agent who apparently he knows a lot about, and she doesn't know why he knows about her. The trouble with the first episode, beside it being a bit convoluted, it was very violent. There seems to be this ratcheting up of violence. I think Hostages also, which I didn't see in its entirety, also has a lot of violence. That's a show about, which is billed as a limited series. They may extend it or not, I guess, depending on ratings, with Dylan McDermott and Toni Collette, about a rogue FBI agent who holds this family hostage because he wants the wife, who's a noted surgeon, to assassinate the president. So that one looks intriguing as well, also with violence. I don't know. Are we too intrigued with this violent element, and is it such a great idea, considering what's going on in the country, with our obsession with guns and the shootings and all things that have happened? You know, it's a mix. It's an amalgam, a cultural ethos. It's out there, and it affects people differently.
And, you know, I'm not for censorship, as you know, as an artist, a writer myself, and I write murder mysteries, for goodness sake. So somebody's always dying in those, even though they're cozy mysteries. I don't think people should censor themselves. I just wonder what our obsession is with some of these things that become increasingly violent, and certainly the video games. So we're going to talk a little bit more on Friday with Dr. Daniela when she's back with our fall psych docket about this combination of video game violence, access to guns, failings in the mental health system, which may have contributed to some of these mass shootings. I mean, we can't put our head in the sand. I kind of agree with, in part, with the people who talk about it's not just the guns. Of course it's not just the guns, but the easy access to guns only makes it easier for people to give in to those impulses and go unchecked. But there are a lot of failings with this guy in the Navy Yard shooting, and we can't pretend it's just about the gun. It has to do with the mental health system, what red flags were waved and who missed them and why and all of that. So we're going to get into that a bit, too, on Friday with Dr. Daniela. Also on Friday, I just want to mention we do have this interesting author, a very interesting man, David Patton, who wrote a moving memoir called Dummy about his life and struggles with autism and learning problems, social problems, psychological problems from all of this, but really a very intelligent man who went on to have a very successful career in the telecom industry and couldn't read or write. He was functionally illiterate and somehow put together this memoir with the help of computers and other people, and it's just a fascinating story. He's got a lot of interesting stories in his life to share. And you know we're all about story here, so if you have a story to tell, I'd love to hear from you. Hop over to the website. It's amybestarkowi.com. Click on the contact icon and tell us about it, because we're always looking for intriguing guests, whether they're musicians like Caroline Rose. How fabulous is that young woman? I think she's going to have a great career. I really do. I mean, you know, you need the breaks, too, along the way, but she has some great talent and a real rich sound. So hop aboard. We're looking for musicians, authors, filmmakers, theater folks. You know who you are. Just let us know, and we'll get you on the schedule if we can. We're booking up pretty much towards the end of the year already, but we've got some great shows coming up, and we love it that you're involved in the show. Follow the show, too, at the Blog Talk Radio site. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, easy as pie, and also, of course, at Twitter, at AB Writes. Indeed. Another tweet came through, this one from Sledge, who says, love the inspiration challenge. Hey, thanks, Sledge. It has helped me a lot. I'm glad to hear it. The Inspiration to Action Challenge, if you haven't gotten involved, never too late. What we do is ask you every single day to jot down one thing that inspires, one thing that brings you sheer joy, and one thing for which you are grateful. Also add to the mix an act of kindness that was either bestowed upon you or that you bestowed upon somebody else. Kind of chart your mood, see how you feel as you're doing that. We also asked you a couple of weeks ago to jot down three goals that you think you can attain by the end of this year. And I think I said 12 weeks, but it could be we have more than 12 weeks in the year, right? Left by the end of the year. And last week we said put together an action plan for one of those, which means break down that one goal into 3 to 5 to 6, whatever steps you think you need, manageable steps. And let us know if it's working out for you. If you have any creativity coaching questions, I'm available for a consultation as well, also at the all-purpose website. I like to send people to the one place. Never mind all those other – I'm on all the other sites, too, but it's easier that way. Whatever works for you, as they say. Hey, this weekend, as I said, you know, it's funny because I was getting together some stuff, cleaning out a lot of clutter. We talked about creativity and clutter and how I do think a little clutter is good. A lot of clutter, when you get the team from Hoarders at your doorstep, might not be such a hot idea. So I'm cleaning up a bit, getting some stuff together, and also giving it away to charity, and that's a good thing because they can use it or sell it or do something productive with it. And I went through a lot of books. I have so many books, and I uncovered some gems. I found a few wonderful Ellen Gilchrist collections. I love Ellen Gilchrist, the great short story teller, and short story writer, and author of novelist, and a couple of collections. I knew I had them, but I hadn't seen them in years, and I just started to reread one, and it's just fascinating, and I love it, and it's great, and that gives me inspiration and sheer joy. And I am definitely grateful for Ellen Gilchrist and her presence in my life as an author and an inspiration. But I also found some of these crazy books. I don't know what I was holding on to, like not textbooks, but just books we use in college classes, things I know I'm never going to use again or read again. They're probably outdated, so I don't know how much they're going to benefit anyone anyway at this point. But I don't know. Sometimes you hold on to stuff too long, and it just you're clinging to junk. And I do believe in releasing that because you want to release it so that you can fill up the coffers with more junk. No, you can open that. Ostensibly not that's the case. You want to fill it up with new things and new possibilities. Sometimes cleaning your house literally can help you metaphorically bring in new things and inspiration into your life. Just try it. See if it works for you. But having said that, when you start cleaning up, I find there's more mess. It's like you clean up, you disrupted the disorder, so now there's, you know what I mean, there's chaos to the chaos now. Never mind. I don't know if you experience the same thing, but you might. I've heard from a lot of people who really do like the clutter, you know, do find clutter conducive. And there are other people. There are other people who are very creative. So I'm not saying if you're neat, you're not creative, because I heard from people who said, yeah, you know, I like it to be orderly and tidy for me to get my creativity going, and I need to just have everything come from within. So I, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all, and I'm not passing judgment. I'm just expressing opinions. Speaking of which, I have an opinion. I have to say I'm not thrilled with making this opinion about a movie I saw over the weekend. I finally got to see Enough Said, which I was looking so forward to. It's the last movie, it's being billed as the last movie that had James Gandolfini featured in a starring role, along with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Toni Collette. A good cast, an interesting scenario, sort of a midlife love romance, two divorced parents, each with a daughter going off to college, meet and kind of have not much of an attraction at first, but then develop this kind of romance, and a little complication ensues when she also meets his ex-wife and kind of spies on him inadvertently. So it's interesting. It's intriguing. I will say I expected so much from it, I guess. So when you have high expectations and they fall short, you have a letdown. The writing just wasn't that crisp, and there was a lot of fat jokes, inexplicably two Sarah Lawrence jokes, which may have offended me, and some middle children jokes. So anyway, it's worth seeing because I do think there's some chemistry there between Gandolfini and Dreyfus, and I enjoyed seeing that, and they're very charming and interesting, and it's a good movie. It's just not as good as I thought it would be. So I wouldn't say don't see it. I would just say see it with lowered expectations, and you might not be disappointed. But you might not have had those expectations anyway. As they say, you never know. 347-857-4505, a couple of minutes left to get into the conversation, and then we're going to wrap things up.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I'm in Georgia nut, mounds don't. I'm in Georgia real milk chocolate, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got deep dark chocolate and chewy coconut. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Peter Paul, I'm a Georgia nut. Peter Paul, Mounds don't.
Because
sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Excuse me, ma'am. Have you seen anything weird going on around here?
There's always something weird going on around here. I think we queued up the wrong song, Trudy, but that's okay. Hey, it is the Annabeth Arkley Show. Welcome back. 347-857-4505. I do want to say there was a reality show duo that are maybe playing with fire. Maybe they're really very strategic and they know what they're doing. I don't know. I'm talking about Teresa and Joe Giudice of The Real Housewives of New Jersey. As you know, they're facing 39 federal counts of bankruptcy fraud, tax fraud, a whole bunch of fraud charges, basically. And they came on this show, the post show that they do after the Real Housewives is on, and they were talking about the charges, and it kind of seemed like they were trying to, first of all, the host, Andy Cohen, said, we talked to your lawyers, there's certain things we can't talk about. But they did talk a lot about the charges in a veiled way, and they kind of deflected it. I think they're trying to, well, first of all, she's, of course, trying to throw anybody she can under the bus, including her husband, where she doesn't know anything about anything. But he answered the questions, and this is not exactly what I would call a bright man, that he said he handles the finances, and then he deflected and said, well, we have accountants and lawyers. I don't know nothing about this. So they're trying to imply that there's some sort of a crooked accountant at work here, and I don't know if that's going to be enough to get them away from these 39 counts. We'll find out. I think Wesley Snipes tried that with his tax evasion trial, too, saying somebody told him he didn't have to pay taxes. Guess what? He still went to jail. I don't know about the other people, but he still went to jail. So we'll see how it plays out. Will it play out on the TV show or not is up for grabs, whether they'll be re-signed. I guess Teresa is the breakout star of that show, supposedly. Her storyline a bit old at this point, unless they do bring in these charges, and they can't really talk about those things on TV, so it kind of seems like it would be the best idea for Bravo to cut the cord and either shut the show down or put in somebody else in her place. But we'll see what happens. But I thought it was just odd. It was interesting to watch them talk about it, but I just thought it was strange that maybe they're setting themselves up for more problems rather than helping their cause. But who knows? They did get their advice from a lawyer, so we'll see how long that one takes to to play out. You just don't know with people. Hey, by the way, today is the anniversary of what would have been Truman Capote's 89th birthday. He was born back on this date, September 30th, 1924. A fascinating character. He died only at 54, and he did had a remarkable signature on pop culture and the literary world, although after his seminal book, In Cold Blood, came out, was a huge success and really transformed a lot of nonfiction writing in a very novelistic way. I mean, really a very important book in so many ways. He kind of disappeared. Well, he didn't disappear so much, but he just, didn't write that much. He became like a talk show guest. And he had a lot of problems with substance abuse and that kind of thing, which held him down. And I guess he made so much money he didn't really have to do the output of the work. We were talking earlier with that young singer-songwriter Caroline Rose about the idea of when the inspiration is gone and maybe his creative juices dried up. And that's a fear that all writers, all artists have. Believe me, we know. I get that. But he it was unfortunate. But he was an interesting writer, an interesting character, too. I mean, of course, he had Breakfast at Tiffany's, In Other Rooms, Other Voices, lots of other books. There are two movies out about him that came out one after the other a few years back. One, of course, was Capote, which won the Oscar for Philip Seymour Hoffman, and well-deserved. But the other one, which in some ways I like them both, and I would love to see them both back-to-back. The other one, Infamous, which starred Toby Jones, the oft-neglected British actor who just doesn't get the credit that he deserves. He's really phenomenal. He was so spot-on in that movie. That one came out a year later, though, so it kind of was shelved. I don't think a lot of people saw it, and I recommend that highly. If you're interested in Truman Capote, if you like cultural history of any sort, because it really does capture those late 50s, early 60s in a more whimsical way. It's a little lighter touch than Capote, which was a heavier version of it. But both equally, both great movies. And if you like Truman Capote and you want to know more about his life, either one is worthy. But nobody really mentions Infamous, and it's such a great little movie. And I recommend it if you can get a chance to see it, rent it from Netflix or whatever, download it, buy it, however you watch your movies out of the movie theater. It is it's a really good thing to watch. And he does such a great job, Toby Jones. He also starred as Alfred Hitchcock in the HBO film The Girl, which I think was a marvelous role. And in fact, I think he actually, I hate to do apples, it's apples and oranges when you compare it, but he was nominated for the Emmy, and Michael Douglas won it for his Liberace because that movie got more attention. And I'm not so sure I deserved it, quite frankly. I liked The Girl. It was a little eerie, although I liked Hitchcock even better, the Anthony Hopkins version, which came out as a theatrical release last fall and got very little notice. And that's a great movie, too. So, two characters I'm very fascinated with, Truman Capote and Alfred Hitchcock, and two movies that were sort of back-to-back about them, and two different performances for sure, but both worthy on both counts. So just check that out, Truman Capote. I just wanted to mention that, this being the anniversary of his birthday. And, of course, there was that wonderful play, which I had a chance to see many years ago, called True, the one-man show that Robert Morse did for many years about Truman Capote. And after the fall, after he had this big fallout with his group, he was very friendly with a bunch of New York socialites and kind of fell out of favor with them because he had written excerpts from his book, which never, I think it was called Answered Prayers, never was released, never was completed. I guess they released a short version of the incomplete manuscript. And he had written an excerpt in The New Yorker, published an excerpt in The New Yorker, and some of his friends felt betrayed by him, and that really was his undoing in terms of his connection to the social world, and I think it might have contributed to his early demise. But interesting, fascinating writer and a fascinating cultural figure of the mid to late 20th century, Truman Capote. Just thought I'd mention that. And what else did I want to mention? Oh, yes, don't forget to check out the website for upcoming events. We have a writing workshop starting this week in Greenwich. Find out more about that on the website as well. Stop by. It's amybetharkowy.com. Coming up on Friday is Dr. Daniela and David Patton, as I mentioned. Next week, Monday, we have an interesting show as well. We will have the director of a fascinating new documentary, compelling documentary about a classroom shooting in a middle school, prejudice, tolerance, and what to do with the young defendant left behind. It's called Valentine Road. It has been making the rounds at various festivals, Sundance finalist, I believe. It will be premiering on HBO next Monday, and we will be talking with the director. That's coming up. Also, Peter Hochstein, who is a interesting bon vivant kind of a guy. He is an interesting, I got to get the whole title of this book. It's a crazy title, but it talks about his life as a tabloid reporter. So a little tabloid nation thrown into the mix. That's all coming up on next Monday on the Into the Dark We Show. So we'll see what happens. Are we going to shut down or not? This is the big question. We'll find out, I guess, by midnight. We'll never shut down, that's for sure. Reach out and have yourself a great week. Thank you, Trudy. Thank you, Aurora, in the booth. Thank you, ML at TCS headquarters. We're shutting down the baseball season, too. Let's go Mets next year. And we'll talk to you on Friday. Hey, whatever you do, wherever you go, in the meantime, do drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
me home.